You're listening to The Cube Show on demand. Get loud.
I really don't understand your question. I don't know if I can't hear or you guys can't talk in the mic or whatever.
Get crazy.
You go find them, you throw your arms around them, you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
Get nuts.
Get up, baby. Get up. Oh, yeah, it's gone.
It's The Cube Show.
This is All Born Radio. Yeah.
I'm a good person.
You know, y'all take it easy down there on the off, baby.
God want us to win the world championship.
You're doing it wrong. You're doing the wrong things.
Is anybody else tired or is it just me?
Hey, legitimate question, though.
Okay.
I'm drunk right now.
Wow.
Another one!
I!
And now, Cole Kublick.
He is bad Auburn man.
Welcome back in Cube Show Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Amp, live from the Southern RV Wholesale Studios as we kick off hour number three every morning. We welcome in our good friend Conrad Thompson.
Conrad Thompson.
Good morning, Conrad. How you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Very well. You had a live show yesterday in St. Louis for your podcast. How did it go?
Man, it was awesome. We had a great time. Capacity crowd, thanks to our mutual friend, Mr. Dave Green, and the fine folks over at 590 The Fan. They were a great host for us, and I look forward to doing it again, man. It's a good time every time.
What about the pay-per-view yesterday? Is there anything of note from that? Any big takeaways that we need to know about?
Couldn't tell you. I was on my way home, didn't have a chance to check it out. I will see it at some point this week. I did hear the main event was phenomenal, but everything else, maybe not so much.
You know, we were talking about just sort of the whole boxing and the price of pay-per-views. How much has the pay-per-view game changed as far as just how the WWE has had success with this app? Because we talked without you on the air last week with the UFC and Showtime both having some promotional power in this upcoming fight, if it happens, with Mayweather and McGregor, and how I could sort of see the UFC back off other events maybe that month leading up to that, because if there is people who maybe budget for one event per month. But how much has the WWE changed the pay-per-view game just based on the success they have had or have not had with their app?
They are sworn enemies now of the pay-per-view companies because they were a consistent purchase that the pay-per-view companies could count on every month. You know, I mean, everybody knows that boxing pay-per-view is kind of dead, with the exception of when Mayweather or Pacquiao fight. And so, obviously, this is going to be a super fight. But if you were to compare buys for, like, a Cotto pay-per-view with a Mayweather, there's just no comparison. And those fights are so infrequent. Of course, the WWE is running very regular monthly and sometimes twice a month pay-per-view specials. So they're sworn enemies now because the way that pay-per-view split worked is 50%. So if Vince was charging $29.95, he would get $15, and then the pay-per-view companies would have $15 on their end between the local service provider and then, of course, Viewer's Choice or whoever the national distributor was. Now that money is completely gone, and they've also, and maybe worse, I guess, they have trained the wrestling fan now that things are cheaper. So once upon a time, if they wanted to see this card, it was $29. So if they ran a SmackDown pay-per-view and a Raw pay-per-view, they'd have to come out of pocket $60 a month. Now they get all of that for just $9.99. So that market is to where you can't go back and sell them pay-per-views now, in my opinion. Once you've kind of gotten people accustomed to, here's how much it costs, it's really hard to raise that rate on them.
How will that change? I mean, I'm trying to think of who really has success with pay-per-views other than boxing and UFC. I mean, is there anybody else even out there who realistically relies on that throughout the calendar year to bring in a big portion of their revenue? I mean, maybe movies and hotels. I don't really know who else is living on, especially live pay-per-view events.
Yeah, live pay-per-view, you're exactly right. It's UFC number one, boxing number two, and it really is in that order because the UFC, again, has the opportunity to do consistent pay-per-views once, sometimes twice a month, whereas boxing is really, okay, Mayweather's fighting twice this year. We're going to have two big shows and then kind of limp along through the rest of the year. The UFC, historically, has a couple of Ronda Rousey fights, has a couple of Conor McGregor fights, and so it starts to build a little bit of momentum with a one-off to support it with an Anderson Silva or a John Jones here or there. That level of name does not exist in boxing. It's kind of all or nothing. But as far as who else is out there, you know, pay-per-view at this point, and I hate to say it like this, exists for hotel rooms and pornography. It is a huge line item that no one talks about, but it is the dirty little secret of the hotel industry. They make a ton of money on that. And so, you know, I don't know why this is the way it is, but it seems as if pay-per-view in hotel rooms is kind of what keeps that adult industry limping along, because now everything in that business is just free online. But for whatever reason, when people get into a hotel room, the idea that you're a little more anonymous is enticing, and people click that purchase button. So it is a significant line item for hotel revenue.
Could you see the UFC shifting to a pay app subscription modeled after what the WWE is doing, and it working?
You know, what's funny is, and a lot of people don't realize this, and I'm glad we're talking about it, the UFC put an app out before WWE did. It's called Fight Pass, and I actually subscribed to it. And you can pay annually or you can pay monthly. And so what it allows you to do is access all old stuff. So if you were like, hey, I want to watch Ken Shamrock versus Tito Ortiz from UFC 40, you can do that. It's right here on the app. But the other thing you can do is you've got access to all of the open workouts, all of the press conferences, any sort of PR leading up to a fight, special little packages they put together. But more importantly, you get the preliminary fights that you don't normally get to see. So there is like the hour of prelim fights that you see on like Spike or, you know, Fox or whoever is the carrier at the time. And then you go to pay-per-view. But before that, for the live house, there may be 2 hours of other fights. You actually get that on Fight Pass as well. And a couple of times a year, they'll run a pay-per-view special abroad. So the timing would be screwed up if they came to you live from Ireland at the normal Ireland prime time. So now if you have Fight Pass, you may wake up and at 9 o'clock on a Sunday morning, you've got a live pay-per-view. So it does exist, but it is not near the moneymaker at this point that the WWE's is, because the UFC is still trying to have the best of both worlds, an app and pay-per-view.
It's crazy to think about. And just how those could you see that being a model for traditional live sports in the future?
Yeah, I really do. And I think that this is kind of something that, the more niche you get, the more viable it becomes. And that may sound a little crazy, but we saw it with television networks a few years ago. You know, the University of Texas has their own network. And so you've got your own television station just dedicated to that. Well, we see that, you know, the success of the SEC network is, you know, just this handful of teams. You can't tell me that there couldn't be an Alabama app and you wouldn't make money with it. Like, you just got a lot of access to everything that's happening in Tuscaloosa or with Nick Saban or the players who are now in the NFL, whatever it may be, old Alabama games, get some of the legends to come in and do, you know, alternate commentary on old games and tell old stories. There's definitely an appetite for that out there, and I do think it'll happen. The question is, who will be first to market, and how quickly will they be able to spread it around to other teams or franchises?
Yeah, and it's easy to spread around savings when you call First Family Mortgage, Conrad. Tell our listeners how easy.
Man, a quick 10-minute phone call right now. It's 808. This is live. We're at our desk, ready to hook you up. And you don't need perfect credit to do this. It really is just 10 minutes on the phone. And how's this for starters? No house payments until September. Now, really think about that. Your single biggest bill, of course, it's your house payment. And you're going to pocket all that cash for both July and August. Come September, you're going to have a better mortgage. This past Saturday, we helped a family cut 9 years off of their loan. Really think about that. They were going to retire with a house payment. Now they've decided to retire the house payment. What does the end of your loan look like? If you haven't thought about that, you need to give us a call right now on your ride to work. I mean, you should know to the day. Here's the day I'm debt-free. First Family can help you make that dream a reality with a quick 10-minute phone call. And, man, if we can't save you money, we won't waste your time. At 425 1-800-981-0105.
Great stuff, Conrad. Look forward to catching up tomorrow.
Thanks, guys.
Conrad Thompson with First Family Mortgage. Go to 1FMC.com. Let's get to 10 after tweets, Arky Shea.
Bring me the tweets!
Also brought to you by 1FMC.com. You can tweet in at Cube Show, at Cole Kublik. A couple different ways to be a part of the show, at Arky Shea as well.
Do you think, and we never really talked about this, that that may be the next step as far as gaining revenue for some of these programs, is to have apps like that? Because I was just looking at my app store for Alabama football, for example, and there's not really anything. There's things that claim to be Alabama football that have, like, media guides on there,
right?
Some homecoming photos.
But you're talking about actually done by the school. Like, Ole Miss has an app. They have an app for their stadium.
Because they got to have...
They have an app for their program, but it's not games.
Right. They should have access to their games because they should have partial access, right? Or did, like, Auburn give up all of that to, like, Fox?
All of it.
Man. That sort of puts you in a little bit of a bind there.
Yeah, it's.
But maybe look at that when that contract's up, or you can renegotiate that at some point. Maybe.
I even wonder if we did it a la carte. If you did it across a season per league, I could see it being a strong form of revenue. Per team, I'm not sure very many would make a bunch of money. Because
if you're talking about these purchasing monthly
individual games per team, there's going to be such a dip between Alabama and Texas A&M and Alabama Charleston Southern that I think the program or whoever the entity is going to look at it and say, it's not worth that. We'd rather have a little bit higher on the low end and be more medium across the board than having the peaks and valleys, because the valleys are just too low. It's not even worth us doing that game.
Yeah, but... But the diehards are the ones that are getting the app for the most part for WWE, like for the Fight Pass for UFC. I think you can make a decent little chunk of change. Now, enough to cover your expenses for people to constantly write for it, to people put radio calls up, to put radio interviews, to put every single press conference, to put every single thing up would be interesting.
I had a guy ask me via Twitter, at Unlimited Tide, Tommy Kidwell tweets, Cole, give us your top 10 college football punters.
Okay. I'm listening. Punters ranked. Here
we're
go.
I'm just going to go with what I gave him. J.K. Scott, and then 2 through 10 were different emojis.
Like for different guys?
I don't really know. Nor do I care. To which Andrew Whitting, at A Whitting BBA, tweets, no Trevor Daniel ? Legitimately, when we're arguing punters on Twitter, it's time to just get away. You got to walk away.
Yeah. What you need to do is to do what you did, and what that guy needs to do is set down Twitter for a while, and just say, you know what, maybe I need to take a day or two off.
Yeah.
To put a punter's name onto. To start typing a punter's name, and to be okay with that. It's a special kind of special.
Bill Clark at Bill Dizzle tweets, at Arky Shea wearing running shoes is like my wife wearing yoga pants. Stop labeling clothes.
Hey, are you saying I don't run? I mean, there's a purpose. Yeah, I agree. But
what's the problem with that? I mean,
they call them running shoes versus. I mean, I guess probably that's what they're for. I mean, they're not high dollar shoes. I mean, I pay like, you know, with my coupon. I end up paying like $50 for them. So, I mean, it's, you know, not a huge high-dollar shoe. But I guess essentially they are more for running, because Nike sells skateboard shoes, like the really low-cut ones.
Yeah.
So they do, I guess they're more what they, I guess, like they sell high tops that are like for basketball players, right?
Is it not okay to have like workout shoes and, you know, shoes that you just wear out to dinner, like nicer shoes? I mean, what's wrong with labeling clothing? I mean, my workout clothes are different than my going to the movies clothes.
Do we have a problem with dress shoes? Could I not say dress shoes? Should I just be able to wear my dress shoes with like golf shorts and a t-shirt out hanging out? Well, now with Bill Dizzle, he says no to t-shirts, but you know, I get that.
Dan Strickland at BamaDan3 tweets, at Cube Show, tune in at 8 a.m. and hear at Hey Hey, It's Conrad talking anonymous hotel room porn. Where else would you rather be?
Let me say this.
Nowhere.
And I'm a guy that will frequently tell you if I watch the old Dirty Movies. I've never done a hotel room one, though.
Why?
Well, again, A, I'm cheap, and B, why? Look, it's free on the internet. Everything's free on the internet, as far as that's concerned. Why pay? I don't even know what cost. Probably what? At least $10 a movie, right? And then you only probably get it for like 24 hours. That means you have to sit there and watch it. I'm only just looking for like scenes. I'm like, you know, like I'm one scene, I'm good. We're good. A third of a scene, I'm good. Can you prorate that, like, for as much as I watch it? Like,
I don't know.
You watch 7.5 minutes of this, that's how much we're going to charge you that percentage. Then I may be down on that.
Variety tweets, at Katy Perry hits a major milestone and becomes the first Twitter user to reach 100 million followers.
Wow. Let's say this. 2 years ago, would you have said Katy Perry or Lady Gaga would have been the first one to that?
Probably Gaga.
So surprising. So what? I wonder how much further Lady Gaga is. Man, Katy Perry to get to 100 million. Again, that's one of those things, like, just your mentions, there's no way you can do it. There's no way.
Yeah, Lady Gaga's way behind, 67 million.
Wow.
It's way behind, man. It's pretty impressive.
It's only two-thirds, though, but...
Yeah. Dave Fleming, at DirtyDave07, tweets, at Archie Shea, next stop, Yeezys!
Oh, my God, Yeezys. Yeezys aren't cheap.
You know how mad I would be if Archie got a pair of Yeezys before I did? Because I don't have a pair. But... Yeah, that would be a problem.
Mrs. Arkey did say, you can follow her on Twitter, by the way, if you want. I mean, she doesn't really tweet, so no big deal. She did say, because I looked at like a lot of brighter color ones, I was like, hey, these are kind of cool, too. And she's like, I have to see you wear these. I'm not approving.
Wow.
I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to have to go behind your back one day and buy them.
Michael Blackburn tweets in at Cube Show, any shoes are running shoes if you try hard enough.
Mm-hmm.
And B. Rand tweets in, Fitty, 4 question marks, 5 question marks.
That's Jason May commented on my shoes and said, what, no big baller brand? That's $495 shoes. I can't do that.
I could get you a couple of decent pairs of shoes instead of those.
For $495?
Right. I'm saying you could get 3 or 4 really good pairs of cool shoes instead of those.
Okay, right, real quick. 1 to 10 before we go to break. 1 to 10, those shoes are a...
Yours?
Yes. The ones you can see on Cole's Snapchat, my Twitter... My Facebook, my Instagram.
See, I take everything in context. So,
like 10, as far as like
the context here is 1 of 10 for you. I'd probably give him a 7.
For me,
yeah.
But for you, they would be a. You wouldn't even look at them twice. You wouldn't even look at them twice.
No, yeah. I got nothing for those. Like if someone gave those to me, I just don't know where I'd wear them.
You just be like, I guess I can give them my dog.
Maybe work out. I could wear those to work out in. Maybe.
And they are running.
Depends on how they feel.
They feel pretty good.
Okay.
The cushion's pretty good.
Well, that's what I look for. Important to you.
Well, no, I mean, I'm just telling you, they feel pretty good. The cushion's pretty good.
Yeah, so that's good.
It's not important to me. It's just, you know, I mean, I'm going to be on stage for 7 minutes Sunday. It's not like I...
You need that cushion.
It's not like I need it for, like, a long time.
All right, we'll talk to Lars Anderson when we come back right after this. Welcome back into the Southern RV Wholesale Studio. Go to srvwholesale.com. Before we welcome in Lars Anderson of BleacherReport.com, got to tell you, Dreamland Barbecue, we're 2 weeks now from America celebrating her 241st birthday. The best way to do that is with Dreamland Ribs.
Oh, that's a great idea.
This year, 4th of July is on a Tuesday. Dreamland's going to be well-stocked for whatever you have in plan. Come in, see your ribs being cooked on the pit, sit down, chow down, call ahead to go order, enjoy it at home with your friends or family, or go to dreamlandbbq.com and have ribs shipped anywhere in the country. Barbecue on the 4th of July is a tradition, and there's no better tradition than Dreamland. Dreamland ain't nothing like them nowhere. Go to dreamlandbbq.com. Lars Anderson joining us now on the phone. So follow him on Twitter, at LarsAnderson71. Lars, good morning, man. How you doing?
Good morning, Cole, my friend. Good to be with you.
Absolutely. Great to have you back. Originally, I saw your article on Becca Longo and wanted to have you in to discuss this female kicker that really has become a bit of a sensation. But first, I stumbled upon, after seeing that, an article that you put out titled, How Streaking Could Change Your Life. It's a tale of two fans, one at the Army-Navy game, another a Reds-Cubs game, doing it for two different reasons. How did this story even come about for you?
Well, I pitched my editors the idea of finding some people who have streaked onto the field and at a sporting event in front of millions and just follow up with them, see how it changed their life. And then, you know, I just kind of went into it blind, and I contacted several different people who had done a streak, and ended up meeting Jimmy Long up in Tennessee. Went and had lunch with him. Jimmy ran onto the field the Army Navy game in front of Trump, and Jimmy is a former. He did 39 months in Iraq with the Army. And he was struggling with depression and just struggling with post-deployment issues. And he decided to just sort of try to raise awareness for that. And it really ended up changing his life. Yeah, he got thrown in jail. Yeah, he had to pay a big fine. But he became this social media sensation, I mean, just immediately after. And people reached out to him who were also struggling with post-deployment issues, depression issues, thoughts of suicide. And it really sort of gave him a sense of purpose, and it absolutely changed the direction of his life. And the other young man who I got in contact with was he just sort of did it a spur of the moment at a Cincinnati Reds game, basically put out there on Twitter, like, hey, I'm thinking of streaking, and all of a sudden he picks up, you know, a couple thousand followers and decides to go through with it. And he's one of these rare guys who ran onto the field in the middle of the game and got away. He ended up unbelievably jumping over the outfield fence and ran into the concourse in Cincinnati, and he evaded security, and it's quite the tale. Of course, he wasn't too bright about it because he put it out on social media that I got away and I did it. And, you know, the police bloodhounds were quickly on the scent, and they picked him up the next day.
Visiting with Lars Anderson. Find his work at BleacherReport.com. He's on Twitter at LarsAnderson71. How do you find these people? When you decide that you want to write this story, how do you go to social media or the internet and find people who have attempted to pull this off?
Twitter is an amazing thing. You know, I just I reached out to these guys over Twitter, and I did think that, you know, if you decide to streak at a sporting event, if you got the stones to do that, I would think you'd want to talk about it. And these two guys were more than willing to talk about it. I did find a few people who they felt the sort of bad side of social media and got, you know, death threats, and they absolutely didn't want to talk about it, especially one young woman who pulled off a streak at a sporting event. And she just said, you know, this is really bad. I can't discuss it. And another guy almost lost his job because he works for a pretty conservative company. And he said, you know, please don't include me in this. I don't want anything to do with it. So it can really go either way.
Lars Anderson with us. I'd like to go back quickly if we could, because I still have another entire story that I want to talk to you about. But just Jimmy Long, the Army veteran that you mentioned that did go streak at the Army-Navy game, how much his life has changed. What is he doing now that resulted from him streaking at that game?
Well, he's getting his master's at Austin Peay, and he wants to work with veterans going forward. After he earns his master's, he actually thinks about getting a PhD in social work once he's done. He's a really bright guy. And, again, even when we were talking up in Tennessee, his phone was ringing off the hook, and it was veterans who were reaching out to him, either over Facebook, Twitter, people have his number. And it's just, you know, he did this thing to make people realize that they weren't alone. And he wanted also to do it in front of Trump to try to put the issue literally in front of Trump's eyes. And you know, again, it just has given him this profound sense of purpose, and it has caused him to just turn around in terms of, you know, the depression has whittled away. And you know, you don't have to be a psychiatrist to realize if you feel that your life has meaning and is rich with meaning, you're more than likely to be a pretty happy person. And that's what's happened to Jimmy.
Lars Anderson is with us. Pretty cool story. Cool stuff to think about, just how people do actually do that for different reasons, and it can affect you in different ways. But the original story I saw that I wanted to have you on to discuss was the story of a young lady Becca Longo, 18 years old, who in April became the first female to earn a scholarship to a Division I or II school, and she signed with Division II Adams State. That's in Alamosa, Colorado. This is not just sort of a feel-good story. She's got some legitimate potential. How did you first hear about Becca Longo?
I heard about her in April when she signed her letter of intent to play football. And there was just sort of a few stories that went out about her being the first woman to ever earn a D2 football scholarship, a D2 or D1 football scholarship. And so I wanted to try to get the story behind that. Like, how does a woman become such a good kicker? And I pitched it to my editors, and they went for it. So I went out to Phoenix and spent some time with Becca and time with her kicking coach, Alex Zendejas of the famous Zendejas kicking family, and her high school coach and her parents. And, you know, the first thing that really struck me was just how powerful her leg is, seeing her kick. Now, she's made a 50-yarder in practice. She consistently can make 44, 45-yard field goals. And again, it was. I just wanted to figure out how she's able to do this. And it goes back to her athleticism, her determination, having a strong father who has helped shepherd her through this, and she's stuck with it. She had a tremendous amount of support from her coaching staff at the school, at her high school, and her teammates. And this story just absolutely took off. I think right now it's at over 1.6 million reads. It's captivated a lot of people, and I'm really happy for Becca. At the same time, though, I will say that there was a lot of sort of cruelty directed at Becca over social media, and we had to turn off the comments at Bleacher Report because a lot of trolls, men, were saying some very nasty things to Becca.
It's unbelievable that you had to turn off the comments. We had Steve O in studio last week, and we were talking to him about social media, and he was saying that comment sections for videos of his comedy when he posted are like the one place that he refuses to go just because of how much negativity is there, and he just decides not to deal with it. Lars Anderson with us. Very cool write-up. You can find it on his Twitter account, at LarsAnderson71, or BleacherReport.com about Becca Longo signing that scholarship. I'm intrigued to know if you talked with her family, her, or the people that she trains with, about sort of what you're speaking of in that comment section, Lars. And that is maybe some of the difficulty moving forward, whether that be other guys in the locker room that are not very accepting, other fans that are not very accepting. Is that something that they openly discuss and are maybe preparing for now?
Yeah, absolutely. Alex Zendejas' son, who's Alex Jr., he kicked at Arizona and against the rival Arizona State, a primetime ESPN game. He missed two extra points that cost them to lose the game in overtime by one. And it was absolutely devastating to him. And now he has become sort of her, de facto mental coach. And that's one of the things they talk about is the fact that, you know, she is going to encounter a lot of just harsh criticism just based on her gender because she's doing something that no one else has done. She's prepared for that, and she's a very confident young woman. One thing that really struck me about her is when she talks to you, she looks you in the eye. She's always smiling. She has a firm handshake. And in speaking with Tim Rosenbaugh, who's the former NFL quarterback, who's now the coach at Adams State, he said that was one thing that really jumped out at him too, was just her supreme confidence. And that's the kind of person you want on your football team, in your program. And what they want Becca to do at Adams State is really just to be that consistent kicker from, about 35 yards in. I think the kind of style of offense they play, style of ball they play at Adams State, they're not going to attempt many field goals beyond 40. And they just want her to be consistent on those shorter kicks. And they won't have her, as of now at least, they're not going to have her do kickoff because they don't want to subject her to getting hit by huge linebacker or whatever. So as of now, she's just going to be kicking field goals and extra points, but that's subject to change.
I can remember when LSU and Les Miles sort of began discussing allowing a female soccer player to come kick, and everybody was talking about what a cool idea it was going to be and how much fun it would be and how in practice, you know, this girl could just bomb kicks and was going to be so accurate, this one, so forth. The first thing that popped into my mind, Lars, was we're going to do our kickoffs. And Mo Isom was the girl that I was referencing. And I don't know why no one else thought of it, but the first thing I imagined was she's going to be a target for some ruthless individuals on kickoffs if they allow her to go out there and do that. Like, she cannot be a part of that. And so it's good to hear that they will protect her that way. I think that's a very intelligent move.
Yeah, you know, on one extra point last year, a player on the opposing team just lit her up. And nothing motivated that team more than seeing Becca do that. But and Becca got right up and pushed him back, and it caused a sort of scuffle on the field. But yes, I mean, I don't think they want to put her in a position of peril. So, like I said, as of now, they're just going to keep her on extra points and again, sort of field goals 40 yards on in. And, you know, she went up there for a tryout in a very pressure-packed situation and absolutely, you know, blew the coaches away. And, you know, there will be times at practice in high school where they'll put Becca out there and got to make a 45-yarder. If she misses, the whole team's got to run. If she makes it, no running. And every time she drilled it.
Great story, Lars. Cool information. It's always good to catch up with you. Keep up the good work. We look forward to talking with you again soon.
All right. Thanks, Cole. Good being with you.
Lars Anderson joining us on the phones. Lars Anderson 71 on Twitter. You can find his work at BleacherReport.com. Pretty cool story of Becca Longo, and just to see can she go on and make it in college football.
You mentioned and yeah, yes, you both mentioned all the vitriol she got on social media, and it's weird to me why we are like that, because I looked her up and I'm trying to figure the two things. One, she's a pretty attractive girl. Okay, she's not like what you would think. She's like one of these like you know, like wedge busters type, I guess, if that makes sense. You know, just like you've had a lot of contact in the face, you know, so that's one angle you shouldn't be going at. So then the other one is what? That you're in a dude sport, but you're not a dude.
I guess, I mean, so. Yeah.
It's weird. Like either she can do it or she can't. And, you know, it's not like Auburn has hired her or recruited her and given her a scholarship to try to kick for them and make that much kind of scrutiny. She's getting a chance at a low level college, and either she can or she can't. And if she can't, well, then she'll just be like everybody else who misses a kick and gets made fun of on Twitter. And if she can, well, whatever. But, I mean, there are guys who get death threats all the time for missing kicks in college games.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's not like she's going to be any different for that for Adams State. It's just, it's weird that so many people are mad that she's a girl in a dude's game. Like, this is going to open up the doors for, like, hundreds of girls to make, you know, Division I rosters. I don't know how many females can probably make Alabama's roster.
None.
Or Notre Dame's.
Yeah, no, it's...
Or Florida's, or Boise State's.
There's not going to be a hostile takeover like anytime soon in college football.
So she's achieved a lot, and if she can do it, great. If not, well, then whatever. She's another kicker who couldn't get it done.
There are concerns that I have, just to be honest with you, though. And it's not just fans.
Oh, I get the physical ones.
I mean,
about
the Katie Nida situation is one that was really ugly and very difficult. And I think that you have to go out of your way and to take precaution as a coaching staff and her parents is how you're going to handle this. There are a lot of situations that could go awry, and I hope that everyone involved with it are doing everything they need to do to make sure that the precautionary measurements are taken to try and avoid anything like that, because it is there are a lot of unknowns with it.
Yeah,
I mean, if she becomes attracted to a guy on the team and they want to date, that's a very difficult place to be. You know, it's just that there are a lot of things that could go wrong, and I hope it works out. I hope she does great, because it sounds like physically that she is capable of doing some things that some of these other girls that have tried to kick cannot, just right, with the power she can generate and the distance that she can kick the football.
And listen, you want to talk about somebody you're hoping they can get 35 in pretty consistently? They're setting her up in a good position, in a position not to fail.
No, that's also a good point, yeah. We'll talk some NBA movement with Matt D'Agostino next. Welcome back in Cube Show, Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Yump. Appreciate Lars Anderson joining us last segment. Now we'll go back to the phones. Matt D'Agostino joins us. Follow him on Twitter at MattDags28. Covers the NBA for NBA.com and Turner Sports. Matt, good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you guys?
Doing well. Let's start with draft week here. 76ers and Celtics agree to swap picks. Boston moving up to the number one spot. What do you think is behind this for the Boston Celtics? What's the thinking for Boston moving up to number one?
I think it's kind of twofold. I think if you look at Danny Ainge's time in Boston as GM, he's been a guy who wants to accumulate as many assets as he can. And I think this was just another opportunity for him to accumulate another asset. You move down two spots in the draft, and a lot of people, depending on who you believe in, have been saying that Josh Jackson is more of a fit for Boston's liking than a Markelle Fultz or Alonzo Ball was. And they figured, you know, he's probably going to be available at number three, so why don't we trade down and pick up a future first-round pick, whether it's next year's Lakers pick or it's 2 years from now and it's the Sacramento Kings pick, a good opportunity for them to maybe grab another highly coveted asset. Now, taking that asset, I think that's probably more likely another asset to use in a future trade, whether it's Jimmy Butler, whether it's Paul George, whoever it may be. I think they're also stacking the deck a little bit to acquire another draft pick that's enticing to another team that's looking to rebuild down the future.
You know, I'm curious, Matt, about this move, because everyone sort of put, you know, Markelle Fultz in Boston, and how would he and Isaiah Thomas work together? Well, now that doesn't seem like it's going to be an issue, and I'm with you. I've read some things and listened to a couple of shows that talked about how Josh Jackson's more of a Danny Ainge type guy. He's more athletic, he's faster, and he may be able to help you keep up with Cleveland, help you keep up with Golden State if you get there at that point of the season. So I'm curious, then, does this make you feel any more comfortable that they like Isaiah Thomas long-term going forward?
I mean, I think he's a piece. I don't think Isaiah Thomas is the number one option on a championship team. Clearly, he's a great scorer. He's not much of a defender. But how many times outside of Allen Iverson have you seen a guy of Isaiah Thomas's stature be a focal point on a championship team? Now, you saw how far away Boston was once they got to the conference finals in challenging Cleveland and then trying to find a way to get past Golden State. But I think Isaiah Thomas is a piece of the puzzle and a very large piece of that puzzle. But I think you're seeing in what Cleveland's offseason plans are in trying to get more athletic wings. How can we guard Golden State? How can we keep up with Golden State? It's about athletic wings being able to guard multiple positions. And I think whether it's Jimmy Butler or Paul George or even Josh Jackson at a very young age out of Kansas, that's the kind of guy that Boston sees they need and they need more of. So if they can find a way to keep Jay Crowder and still be able to get a Jimmy Butler or a Paul George, I think that's probably their plan. And you know, Isaiah Thomas can share that lead dog role or maybe even slide down to a number two role depending on who ends up in Boston. But I think they're gearing for a win-now scenario. And let's be honest, with the draft picks they still have, they're still in very good position to be very good next year and to keep improving down the road.
He's Matt D'Agostino of NBA.com. The NBA draft is, of course, Thursday night. Was now curious about what's going on the other side of that Eastern Conference Finals, which is the Cleveland side. Paul George has said that he has just talked with Indiana and says, I'm not coming back to you next year. So go ahead and do what you can with me. See if you want to trade, get some value out of this. And word is Cleveland has made contact with, Indiana has made contact with Cleveland to see about a trade. What are the chances do you think Paul George gets traded to Cleveland?
I don't see it as likely. Let's put it that way. Sure, anything could happen, and I would imagine if it's going to be Paul George, I would imagine Kevin Love is part of the main piece coming back. And I haven't read anything to really confirm any of that. It just seems likely that would have to be some sort of reason coming back over Indiana's way. But I don't really see it as being too likely. One, Paul George has really put Indiana in a tough spot. He's basically said, I'm not coming back, and I'm letting everybody know it. And I'm telling you where I would like to go anyway in Los Angeles and play for the Lakers. It puts the Pacers in a really tough spot to try to extract maximum value. I think him announcing that actually helps the Bulls that they're going to try and trade Jimmy Butler, because people are going to be more willing to give up Jimmy Butler. He's got an extra year on his contract. And the Bulls can keep Jimmy if they want to. They don't have to give him up. And it looks like Indiana is now in a position where we're going to need to trade him to salvage some sort of value out of him before he leaves next year in the offseason, and we get absolutely nothing for him. But I don't see Cleveland as a likely landing spot. I know they've got a lot of contracts tied up. They had a very large payroll, paid a lot of luxury tax this season with the team they had. And I don't see a ton of enticing pieces going back to Indiana in such a trade. As long as it's Cleveland, they're going to be dealing with low-level draft picks and not a ton of youth on that roster that Cleveland's going to be willing to give up.
Matt D'Agostino of NBA.com with us. Jimmy Butler's name being mentioned now. His name was mentioned in the middle of last season towards the trade deadline last year. Is his name being out there on the trading block, Chicago basically admitting that, I guess, our version of a super team by bringing in D-Wade didn't work and we're willing and ready to hit the reset button?
No. In fact, I think if you check the pulse of Chicago Bulls fans, they were ready to admit it wasn't going to work pretty much as soon as it happened. And definitely midway through last year, the trade deadline, Bulls fans were saying, what are we doing? This isn't working. Like, if this is going to get us an 8 seed in the playoffs, this isn't what we want. You look at the GMs and the front office over in Chicago, and they've been very reluctant to do that. They are trying to compete. They sell out every single game in Chicago. They're trying to field a roster that can stay competitive, and they've got name brands on that roster, but the pieces just don't fit together. Dwayne Wade is past his prime. Rajon Rondo is a grumpy guy most of the time. And Jimmy Butler is the only true building block that they have right there that's already established himself as a primetime player. So I think it's past the point of Chicago should realize by now that they need to kind of blow things up and hit the reset button. And Jimmy Butler going wherever he would go would help do that. I also think if Jimmy Butler goes, Dwayne Wade is less likely to opt into his contract. And then Rajon Rondo's contract is only guaranteed $3 million next year. So I think if Jimmy Butler goes, you may be more likely to see Dwayne Wade decide, maybe I'm going to go try and chase a ring somewhere else, and they could possibly get rid of Rajon Rondo and lose all three of those guys. But I think Jimmy Butler is definitely the first piece, the first domino for that to fall in Chicago.
Matt, last question. Do you think we see another high value, high price, high name move here for the draft in the top five before we get there Thursday?
I don't. I think we've seen what we're going to see. The only thing that I'm really reading or hearing that maybe of some note is Sacramento, who has the 5th and the 10th pick. And I really think this is a pivotal draft for them after trading Boogie Cousins. I think they need to nail these two picks to kind of get that rebuild started. Buddy Hield is not the answer in Sacramento. They're going to need some more pieces, and certainly can get some in the first 10 picks. And they really like De'Aaron Fox, it seems. And they've been trying to see if they can move up to maybe 3 or 4 or maybe even 2 to make sure they get Fox. But I think it's a pretty high price to pay if they're going to package both the 5th and 10th pick to try and get up there to ensure that they get Fox. There are certainly other good point guards in this draft that they can take either at 5 or 10 if they want to get somebody else at 5. But I think that's probably the only move we would really see to move up in those top 5 spots. They're already at the bottom of that at number 5. But I think we're pretty well set with where we go at this point. First 4 spots this year, same order as the first 4 spots last year now. So it'll be interesting to see how those teams decide to go Thursday night as we get set for another crop, a very deep draft class this time around.
Matt, great stuff. Always appreciate the time. Look forward to catching up again soon.
You got it. Thank you.
Matt D'Agostino joining us on the phones there of NBA.com. Before we go to break, I want to tell you about our friends at Valley Equipment Rental. Go to valleyequipmentrents.com or call 256-964-6081. Valley Equipment Rental located at 3551 South Memorial Parkway. Tillers, cultivating, front tine, mid tine, two different size rear tine tillers, all available at Valley Equipment Rental. Scissor lifts, jackhammers, pressure washers. There's a 3,000 PSI hot pressure washer, three different size cold pressure washers, stump grinders, and more. Call Ross and Tanner and the guys today, 256-964-6081, 964-6081 for Valley Equipment Rental. Whatever project you have at your home, Valley Equipment Rental has you set. Josh Butler joins us next to talk fishing.